Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 148 for comics originally released on June 9th, 2010. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman 700. And we're getting to where we're going to have a couple of these anniversary or, you know, 100-issue type things from DC. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman are all hitting that, I believe, this month. And that's kind of a big deal. We talked about Spider-Man 600, Thor, whichever 100 that was, 700 maybe? And which other one did we do over at Marvel?
I think we did Hulk.
And maybe Captain America, too.
Yeah. DC just didn't even try to compete with those 100-issue ones from Marvel. I was unimpressed with Batman 700. I mean, the story was okay, but, I mean, the package itself for $4.99 paled in comparison to what Marvel did for its centennial issues.
That's fair, because they really pulled out all the stops. Theirs was like 104 pages. I like the cover gallery they did. I wish DC had... It's a damned if they do, damned if they don't, though. I wish DC had done that. But if they had, it would be hard not to say, well, they're just copying Marvel. So, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I mean,
they didn't have to do exactly the same thing, but, I mean, at least trying to give more than, I mean, this is about 31 or 30, depending on how you count it, it was like a 31 or 32 page story. I mean, they don't even try to give a particularly long story. And then you get a bunch of pinups. It's like, eh, you know.
Yeah, I liked a few of those, didn't like a few others that I didn't need them there. The operational files, though, I thought were kind of cool. With the Batcave and stuff like that there at the end. But I see what you're saying, because...
I mean, even the page count, I mean, for the number of pages a story, it was, like, less than you'd normally get in a regular issue. Whereas Marvel gave you extra.
Yeah, certainly this was less than I think the lead story was in most of the Marvel anniversary ones. And then they'd give about a half dozen short stories and then the other material. Right. So, I mean, I can see where you're coming from there, and I don't disagree. It wasn't something that really jumped out at me while I was reading it. And I thought they did a very interesting job kind of covering the different Batmans. I had some mixed feelings on the different story segments. The first one was just too early Batman for me, if you know what I mean. I mean, the Riddler just looked wrong. This was more of the almost 50s, 60s era Batman that I tend to care for. It was not a bad story, but this is one of those stories where I think Morrison, because it's written by Grant Morrison, and it's a little of both good Grant Morrison and bad Grant Morrison for me, in so much as overall it was a good story, but he cheats and sets things up wrong, I think. Because he goes on this whole thing about the maybe machine and how things... It's not a time travel machine, but a simulator sort of a deal. And then goes and completely violates that through the story. Okay, maybe the people who are describing it are just wrong. I suppose you could go with that. But to me, it's not quite totally playing fair with the reader. So the first story, again, early, you know, Batman stuff was okay. The middle story... with the current Batman and Robin was probably my favorite part. More so just because I've always been a Nightwing fan, you know, since the early days of the new Teen Titans and stuff like that. So, you know, that Batman I enjoy. When they got to the part with Damian, it was just a little too dark for me. And, I mean, that fits that character, and it fits what they've done with that character before as Batman. But, like, the Two-Face 2 was just a little kind of gross, in my opinion. But, again, that's what they were going for. So, I mean, kudos for succeeding in that. But then, it really kind of surprised me when we get past the middle point and the staple. We kind of finish off that main story, and then we get kind of, sort of, not epilogues, but continuations of the other Batmen we've seen. I mean, I liked how they brought Terry McGinnis into the mix and kind of establishing... at least with the current you know, view of the timeline, he's going to be a Batman. I didn't recognize this Borg era kind of Batman with the Resistance is Impossible stuff. I don't know where that was from. But I know a few of the others were from various places. The one from Nugothotropolis Megaburg or Megurb or whatever the hell that place is. I mean, talk about unpronounceable. I think that may have been the Batman from the Hex sci-fi series they did for about 18 issues right after Crisis. And then on the next page, you know, we get the Batman 1 million. So I like how they were kind of trying to tie all that together and almost go with the legacy aspect of Batman. And I felt that was cool and gave it a little bit more of an epic scope than I felt we got in some of the Marvel 100-issue anniversary things. But again, flip side, I see your point where it leaves you wanting a little in terms of current story content.
See, those back ones, I mean, it's like, you know, do two or three pages of each one. And, you know, maybe put a caption on there that says Batman Beyond, Batman 1 million. You know, Batman.
Yes, you know,
yes,
people I agree.
Who are not scholars of reading every single crazy future appearance of Batman in the world. You know, that's where it, you know, by your said, that's where it creeps into bad Grant Morrison, where it's
yep.
like this really cryptic, inscrutable thing where, you know, you have to be a scholar of continuity to understand what little wink, wink, nudge, nudge thing he's doing. And I can't even say that without that, I enjoyed those pages. I mean, a lot of times you can say, well, you know, I enjoyed the story anyway, even though, you know, but, you know, for these pages, it was like, I think the whole enjoyment factor of this tiny little snippet is kind of getting the in-joke. At least for me, I didn't get a whole lot out of any of those pages, except for the Batman Beyond one, which I remembered.
I would agree
I didn't
with you, because
remember the Batman 1 million one.
Even having recognized a couple of those characters, I'm not going to say I got anything out of those pages, because it was a very much a page just to acknowledge the character existed. And it didn't seem to really fit into any story or have any repercussions or relevance to the story being told. So to me, it was an indulgent series of pages versus, I mean, you're already dealing with time travel. Maybe the guy overshot a little, or I don't know. I mean, there are other ways they could have tied it in and had at least a tangential connection.
Mm-hmm.
So this game, to me, this isn't even a scholarly thing. This is a trivia master kind of a thing. And when stories devolve into that, to me, that's a bad thing. It lacked accessibility in that respect. And to me, again, it goes back with that, you know, maybe machine implied no time travel. We actually get time travel, yada, yada. It's like, overall, I enjoyed a lot of this stuff, but I think it was flawed on many levels. Whereas I think we came out of a couple of the Marvel 100-issue things just completely blown away. I think that was that maybe the Spider-Man one or whatever? I mean, there were one or two that we came out a little cold or whatever, like the Cap or whatever. But there were a few others that really paid off. To me, this was somewhere in between. I enjoyed it, but, you know, some of that is forgiving of the flaws. So,
I mean, I thought it was an okay story. It was not a 700 issue, you know. Wow, I'm totally blown away. This was so cool. It could only have happened in an anniversary issue because it was just so cool kind of thing. I gave the issue a 3. It was okay.
It
should have been more, in my opinion.
I can see where you're coming from. I gave it a 4. I'm not going to say it was the strongest of 4s or whatever, but I agree that this was certainly not a high watermark by any measurement, and it should have been. You know, Batman's one of the longest-running characters, and some of the stuff they've done on previous anniversary issues I thought was a bit more pivotal to the character, at least at the time. So this was not all it could have been, and maybe all it should have been. So I can see that. But for me, it was an enjoyable enough, you know, kind of single-issue story, and I liked that. So, but I totally see where you're coming from on that. Now, how long have you been reading Batman?
Oh, I mean, I've read it since before issue. I mean, not off the rack, obviously,
right.
But I mean, I've read him back to probably issue 150.
Wow.
You know, off the rack, I started reading Batman in the late 70s.
All right. I started somewhere in the early 80s. I've got it going solid back through 348, but I probably had to get a couple of those later as back issues. Around the time Jason Todd first came on board, I was certainly getting it on a regular basis. So that would actually be around the anniversary issue of Detective Comics, I think. Whatever major one it had around that time. So
yeah, I remember that one. It's got kind of like the book kind of on the cover.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I was surprised to realize I've read like half the run of Batman. So, because, I mean, for some of these that go way the hell back, that's not easy to do. Shall we move on to our next book?
Sure. Next up, we've got Avengers Academy, which is essentially Avengers, the Initiative, the Next Generation. I guess if you want to me, it's actually a little cooler than that because I like the instructors that they've got in the school setting. You know, we have Hank Pym, we've got Tigra, we've got Justice, we've got Speedball. Throwing Quicksilver in there, I think, was a nice touch.
That was the unexpected one for me. I like the mix of characters they've got. Pym was a good choice. Justice was a great choice. Speedball, very interesting given his past and stuff. But yeah, Quicksilver, I didn't see that one coming, and I'm like, I hope they do something cool with him. It could be a very good fit for him, but not one that I would have necessarily picked.
And given the reveal at the end, it makes good sense, too.
Yes. I thought the reveal at the end, and I don't want to give that away, was an interesting one, but not like a bombshell reveal like we've gotten a few times in the past. There have been a couple of issues where you go through that first issue thinking, okay, I got it. It's I understand the basic premise. It's not bad. It's not great, whatever. Then you hit that last page, and it's like, well, crap, now I've got to rethink everything, you know, kind of a deal. And I see where they're going with this, and it was a good reveal, but it was one of those that, again, didn't have quite that, oh, wow moment. It's like, okay, you know. So, I mean, other people may have different reactions to that. The choice of characters they've got for this team, I thought was a little, I'm almost going to say cliche, because you've got kind of the standard mix of characters. Okay, we need a skill-based one, so we get Finesse, who's actually kind of a cool twist on Taskmaster. Instead of mimicking abilities, she seems to actually learn them at lightning pace. And she's got an interesting personality, a dynamic one that actually moves the group dynamics along, so I like that. Metal, he's just the strong guy. To me, he reminded me of the Thing of, you know, ooh, he looks monstrous kind of a deal. So again, kind of cliche, but at least in this case, they're using it well in terms of how his personality is. Hazmat just seemed like a female radioactive man, really limited power set, and it almost seemed like you could write her off as a fire star with an attitude problem. That's the one I think they're going to really have to sell me on the story potential of the character. Reptile, standard animal-based power. We saw him in the one-shot way back when, and I didn't really care for him then. I like him a little better here, but Vale was used as kind of the intro character. We're following kind of her story for the most part this issue as the vantage point. Interesting twist on an air elemental. I got totally mixed feelings on that costume. I kind of like it. I kind of hate it. But she was a good choice and a good vehicle to get us through the story. But then we got, like, Stryker, who seemed like Living Lightning Mark II. Do we need another energy projector and on the team? And frankly, neither one's really likable, neither him nor Hazmat. But that character, I really felt, got the short end of the script here. Because I didn't feel he got much time, much characterization. It's kind of a, oh yeah, and we've got him too. So they've got some potential here with some of these characters. I think Metal, Finesse, and Vale are going to be potentially the standout ones. Hazmat, Reptile, and Stryker, I'm not so sure about. But at least in the course of this issue, I mean, all of these except Reptile are new characters. I give them a lot of credit for really, for most of these, establishing them pretty solidly, both in terms of what their powers are and what their personalities are and where they are in life at this point in the span of this one issue. So I felt they told a really fair amount of story here. I felt like I got a very satisfying chunk to digest. They set up the premise, the character, the tone, gave it a twist at the end. I mean, I'm certainly going to be back for more, but for me, that was almost a given with Mike McCone on the art. I think he's a great artist. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of guest instructors they bring in. And I hope they throw in a couple of curves. Don't bring in just Cap and Thor, the obvious choices. Do something like they did with Quicksilver. Bring in somebody you just would not expect. These kids think they've got nothing to learn from, and then just really impress us with that. So I felt this was a strong first issue. It set up as kind of the flip side of Avengers Academy in certain respects of, okay, you know, Osborn and stuff tried it, you know, now let's see the Avengers actually try it and stuff. It harkened back just enough to the 90s jacket era Avengers where they are actually training people and stuff like that, yet had its own identity here. And I thought it was cool to see the Infinite Mansion used again. So I like this. I thought it was really fun.
I have a tendency to like these issues. I didn't go as in-depth into analyzing why every character is on the team. I just went with the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I like the setup. I like the instructor choice. You know, I'm going to be curious how they get these guys out on missions and what they end up doing, because if it's, you know, they're going to have to do that, you know, for the sustainability of the series. They can't just have them hanging around in the classroom, in the gym all the time. They're going to have to get out in the world and have them doing some stuff. So that will come in later issues, how that plays out. But I really enjoyed it. It was out of the six Avengers titles, there's five, and I throw Thunderbolts into the mix as one of the Avengers relaunch titles, since, you know, Luke Cage is running a, you know, team of misfits.
Right.
You know, all of that. It's in the top half of those for me. I started a thread out on the forum for the Avengers franchise relaunch. You know, people can talk about which ones they like, you know, what order. You know, for me, it was Secret Avengers, then New Avengers, then Avengers Academy. So Avengers Academy was about my third favorite out of the six. And then Thunderbolts, Avengers Prime, and then the core Avengers title, interestingly, was my least favorite of the six.
Yeah, I thought the core Avenger title was a little weak. When did New Avengers start up? I don't think I've read that one yet. I'm liking what they're doing so far on Thunderbolts. I think that one's pretty good. I would say this, Secret Avengers and Thunderbolts, are in the top half. Avengers, unfortunately, not. And it'll be interesting to see how these titles all kind of shake out. I agree, it'll be interesting to see how they get these kids out in the field and what they do with them, and if they kind of rotate in some new characters. But it's kind of the young X-Men, new X-Men, new mutants version, if you will, of the Avengers. So I think this has a lot of potential.
So I gave it a 4, and it was a very solid 4 for me.
Yeah, I gave it a 4 too. It's one, though, that I think the series could easily, for me, go up to a 5 over time. It just depends, you know, again, where they go and if they pull out some unexpected stuff or if they don't.
Well, what I liked almost most about it was that it was the same general concept as Avengers the Initiative, but they changed it. So, you mean, it had different characters and a different, you know, different feel to it. I mean, the high-level look and feel was the same, but when you get right down to it, it was a very different book. Whereas Avengers and New Avengers are exactly the same identical book that Bendis was telling, but just renumbered to number one.
Yeah, well, and the other thing that's kind of cool with this one is you essentially have two teams to be dealing with. You got the new kids, and then you've got the instructor team, if you will. And again, like you said, they pick some good characters for that, and I think they've got a dynamic mix of personalities.
Right.
But you're right. The other stuff, certainly the Avengers one, it's just been there, done that. Why renumber it other than you can?
Yeah, and you'll get New Avengers next week. I picked up a
variant
blank
cover. Got it.
When I was at the, that I'll get a sketch on at the con.
I see.
It was like regular price at the local shop.
Cool. Shall we move on to our last book for the week?
James Patterson's The Murder of King Tut. This is based on a novel by James Patterson and Martin Dugard. The adaptation is by Alexander Irvine. We have two parallel storylines, one in ancient Egypt with art by Christopher Mitten, and one in the 1930s, I guess. Is it the 1930s? It's probably earlier than that. I think it's more around the turn of the century.
It's like 1887 initially, 1891. Yeah,
it's way before they find King Tut's tomb in this first issue, and that's Howard Carter, who's the guy who discovered King Tut's tomb. And that art's by Ron Randall.
So you've already answered one of the questions I kind of had, and that question was, might I have enjoyed this more if I knew more about the history of King Tut?
Well, actually, here's the thing. It's like, I know that Howard Carter's the guy who discovered King Tut's tomb, but that's about where my expertise ends. And
hey, it's further than mine.
And I had the exact same question as I was reading through this, especially the ancient Egypt part. I had a really hard time following what the heck was going on and why what I was seeing was cool. I don't even know how to pronounce it. You know, a lot of times when they have these kind of books, they put a pronunciation guide in there. That's like actually one of my favorite things about reading, like Age of Bronze, for instance, by Eric Schanauer, is they have a pronunciation guide for the ancient Greek names, because, you know, if you're like just struggling with how to pronounce some of these things, just in your mind when you're reading something, to me, that kind of reduces my enjoyment. But that's kind of a nit. I was reading through this, though, and I was really struggling. It's like, who are these people? Why do I care? It's called The Murder of King Tut. I don't get any Tut. I don't know what the relationship is of these Egyptian characters that I am seeing to Tut. I'm assuming that these are his parents or grandparents or, you know, some place up the chain from him, but I don't really know. I mean, I don't really know what the deal is with the Egyptology kind of part, you know, in the turn of the century, 1900s. You know, the little kid is Howard Carter in this. So, you know, it gets to the point where, had I read the novel, or had I been a really hardcore Egyptology fan and known a lot of history here, I think I would have liked this a lot more than I did.
Yeah, I came out the same way, particularly on the ancient Egypt stuff. I didn't know who these characters were, if any of them were Tut or not, or whatever. And again, that's just I've seen the King Tut exhibit when it went through San Diego like 20, 30 years ago. So at one point I might have known this, but again, not an Egyptologist or whatever myself. So there were aspects here. It's like, again, who are they? Why should I care? I will say the different story or the different art styles, I mean, between the two storylines helped keep it pretty clear, although I would think it'd be fairly obvious just due to the difference, you know, of being in ancient Egypt or not. But the different art styles, I think, worked. This is one
I thought
where
that was a really cool concept. I mean, I really enjoyed that, and I like the art. I mean, I just, from the story, I could not really grasp what was going on and why I should care.
Yeah. Well, and add to that, like you said, they make reference to Egyptian stuff, their gods and stuff like that, and with no glossary, with no footnotes, with no contextualization of that, some of that was lost on me. So I liked the Howard Carter stuff a lot more than the older stuff just because it was that much more accessible to me. But I felt that this entire thing was very much set up, no payoff, miniseries, etc., first part of a novel. I mean, I get that. That's part of what they're doing here. But again, I go back to, if I knew more about the King Tut material, might I have enjoyed this more? I didn't dislike it. It was interesting, but it didn't really hook me. But I mean, I'm going to go for the ride and see what's going on. Now, part of it also is my experience with James Patterson, I think, is summed up by his appearances on the Castle TV show. I don't think I've read any of his books, but I'm sure in the course of a novel, you know, where you get, I would at least go through it all in one sitting, a slow start wouldn't be that big of a deal. But for a single issue of a comic versus the first chapter of a trade paperback or something, It's a slow start.
So lest we get called to task by some Egyptologist tweeting, you know, what's the deal with these guys coming in to this with no context. Just like, again, you know, our policy on reviewing a comic is, you know, it's a comic book show. James Patterson fans notwithstanding, hardcore Egyptologists sitting in a museum somewhere notwithstanding, this is a comic book marketed to the comic book audience, and I'm not an Egyptologist. I've never read a James Patterson novel. I've never read this James Patterson novel. It seemed cool in the idea of it.
Yeah.
I picked up the number one issue hoping that they would draw me into the story, and they absolutely failed to do that. I was not drawn into the story, and I was just kind of moving along saying, you know, what's the deal? And I think that when you're making a comic book, you should be mindful of that, that people will potentially pick this up without all the context that you, the writer, or, you know, you, the person who knows all this other context, have. And if you can't manage to put that stuff into the story, the editors at the company should, like, take a couple of house ads out of it and stick in a couple of pages of context.
Yeah.
You know, so that we can understand what the hell is going on. You know, have a, instead of a, you know, bunch of advertisements for True Blood and Jack the Ripper and all this other kind of stuff, you know, put it in an interview with James Patterson talking about this book. And, you know, give me a couple of pages of information about, you know, who some of these people are and where this is going to pay off in the story. I mean, maybe it'll pay off when I read the entire, if I read the entire thing as a trade paperback, but they're publishing this as a number one comic book.
Well, and that's the thing.
It failed as a number one comic book.
I agree with that, because just like we were talking about Avengers Academy, I mean, where we had six new characters that we knew nothing about, and, you know, in the course of it, we learned quite a bit about them. Here, we really have Howard Carter and presumably King Tut, who I'm not even sure showed up in this, and maybe he did. Don't know.
I don't think he did, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, if he did, it was not obviously so. For a $3.99 book, for a single issue installment, I feel I got story but not story chunks. I didn't feel I got relevant plot points to give me any kind of a context as to why these two stories are going to intertwine, how they're going to intertwine, or what the hell the Egypt part of it had to do with King Tut at all. I mean, I'm going on the assumption this other guy is going to go find King Tut and figure out the murder. But it failed in that respect as a good starter thing. I give it a little bit of leeway in so much as it's very much a self-contained miniseries. So I expect a little more slow beginning, build up, and hopefully with payoff there. And perhaps I'm being a little charitable with that versus an ongoing series, which I think has a bit more of a have to sell you up front hurdle to overcome. And, I mean, I gave this a 3. I'm not going to say it was the strongest of 3s. It lacked accessibility. It lacked context. But it was enjoyable. I mean, I liked it okay. I thought it was a good story, not a brilliant story. And I'm hoping that in the bigger context, it'll work better for me. I've already got them pre-ordered, so I'll stick around with it. But if I were getting this off the rack, I would read this and I would not come back for more.
I felt the same. I mean, well, I went back to our... When I get to one of these things, I kind of go back to our definitions. I'm giving it a 2, which is okay. A few problems with execution, but still worth reading. It did not make it up to a 3 for me, which is a good, solid comic because of the reasons we talked about.
No, now, that's fair.
I had pre-ordered number 2. I'm not going to get 3 and 4. I will maybe pick those up out of a bargain bin at some point, but I might, after I read 2, decide to add 3 and 4 back on.
But it's still got to sell you on the thing, yeah.
It needs to sell me, because, like you said, if I walked into a shop and picked up this number one issue, I would not come back and get number 2.
Well, and you're right. Based on our definitions, the way I feel is a 2, so that's what I'm going to put down as my review then. So it's one that it needs accessibility. Now, going back, though, to your comment about how we review things and stuff like this, and this is kind of going off into more of a general discussion here, I read comics for enjoyment. I review them as part of that. It may seem like I did all this analysis on Avengers Academy. No, that was just stuff that kind of popped up, you know, as I was reading it, just because that's the bizarre way in which I think. Now, could I and should I have done more research on the Murder of King Tut storyline? Maybe. However, I'm going to bring back a little segment we haven't done for many weeks, and that's how many comics have you gotten this week?
Yeah.
This week, I got 41 comics, or 41 items, I should say, one of which was the Stardrop graphic novel, and everything else was a comic. Last week, because I have this here, I got 42 items, one of which was the Wonder Woman Encyclopedia, one of which was the Atomic Knights hardcover, one of which was Avatar's animated art book, so we'll say 39 books. The prior week, I got... it says 240 items, but 189 of them were bags and boards, so somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 or 50 books. Prior to that, I got about 30 books, 32, I think. No, 30. So, I mean, I'm reading a couple of dozen comics a week, or at least I'm getting. I'm got a, like a short box. I'm behind. I filled a short box almost because I'm that far behind on my reading. I read this stuff for enjoyment. I'm not going to go and research King Tut or, you know, the history of some writer or some character or whatever. Do I think people who do that may get more out of the story? Certainly. And if they want to do that, more power to them.
I agree. And that's the thing. It's like I could have gone and done some internet research and learned a lot more about this. And if my purpose in doing the weekly comic spotlight, and you know, yours also, was that we give a in-depth analysis of this comic book, you know, based on having a whole lot of information that goes outside the boundaries of the comic itself, then that was what I should have done. But it really, that's not what we do with the show. I mean, we pick up a comic book, especially a number one comic book. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I got 40 comics this week. 10 of them were number one comics.
Yeah.
Out of those 10 number one comic books that I read. And so I got Avengers Academy number one.
Yeah.
I got, I'm going down my list here.
Hack slash First Maniac number one.
King Tut number one. Rawhide Kid number one. Shrapnel number one. Tom Strong number one. You know, Young Allies number one. There's just a whole bunch of number one comic books here. It's just, you know, it's just of all those, and I read all the number one comics this week. Of all the number one comics, all the other nine, you know, gave me enough information within that number one for me to kind of know what the heck was going on in that comic. I mean, even like oh, I missed Buzzard number one from Eric Powell. And, you know, it's just, you know, even the Hack Slash number one, you know, which is not a, a brand new number one, but it is a number one mini that's based off of a bunch of previous Hack Slash material. I thought they had enough explanation of what the characters were in that, that you could understand what was going on. Buzzard is a spinoff from The Goon, and Buzzard is a character that was in The Goon. I didn't need to read necessarily all the other Goon stuff to know what was going on in that issue. Now, I had read that other Goon stuff, but I felt that they had the material in there, you know, to give me the context, you know, same with Rawhide Kid and, you know, a lot of these other ones, you know, they make references back and, you know, even Tom Strong, I mean, on Tom Strong, I've read some of the past Tom Strong. I have not read all of it. And in fact, the characters that were featured in this, I don't recall reading the comic books that had these particular characters. I don't know if you read Tom Strong.
I've barely touched any of the other comics for this week, so I have not read that one yet.
But, I mean, they bring back characters that it certainly seems like they have touched upon in the past.
Well, but flip side, Avengers Academy, it's a new number one. How far back does your run of Avengers go, and how much of that have you read?
I started reading Avengers with issue number 106.
It's up to 500-ish equivalent, at least, before it started renumbering all the time. So you've got, And I've go back to, I think, the middle of the 100s, maybe late 100s. So I probably started off the rack around 250 and been reading it ever since. So in some of these cases, we may not have all the experience with all the characters, but in other cases, we go back with those teams, with those characters, with those creators on the comic side of things a couple of decades. I mean, one of the things I think we bring to the comic book podcasting community is the fact that we're well read on comic books. Each of us have, 45,000 comics. In my case, you're probably 55,000 easily.
65.
65. Well, yeah. You buy a lot more back issues. Yours is growing a lot faster than mine. And so we do have that context. We do try to come knowledgeable to these things, but we're also not treating it like it's a trivia contest, and we're reading these for enjoyment, not memorization. So it's just something that I find interesting when I've read reviews online in the past where somebody will pick up the second issue of a storyline that goes through Superman or whatever. It's like, I'm totally lost. It's like, well, that is the second part of a story. So in those cases, we try to do a little homework if we know we're jumping on that way or whatever. We try to get fair, discussions about these comics, but we're coming at it from what we think based on the baggage we're bringing and really what's on the page in the book.
Now, with a superhero-ish comic book, I do believe that a number one issue, even though they renumber stuff time and time and time again, if they're going to slap a number one on something, they should, give you a little bit of a context because it is a number one. Now,
Well, yeah,
that
they're trying to
said,
get the sales boost from a jumping on point. They got to pay the piper and make it a jumping on point.
With that said, I don't think they need to explain who Superman or Spider-Man is. But, in the case of Avengers Academy, hey, they explain who all these new characters are that we've never seen before.
But
You
even
know?
though they don't need to give Pym's complete backstory, they do tell us who he is in the context of Avengers Academy. He's essentially running the show.
Right.
And that's really, at this point, all we need to know about him. He's a smart guy. He can cure stuff. He's done this, done that, whatever. So even for the existing characters, we got the context we needed that made them relevant to this. We got that for Speedball. We got that for Quicksilver. We got that for Tigra. I think we got that for Justice even. So even the established characters, we don't get their full, everything that's ever happened to them, but we get enough to understand why they were picked as instructors and what relevance they have to the book. And again, to me, that's the level of accessibility I expect out of a number one issue. So.
Yeah. Now, I read one other book this week that I think we had made a special pick back a couple of months ago.
We thought about it, but didn't. I went and checked.
Oh, we didn't make it a special pick? Well, I considered making it a special pick. Vengeance of Moon Knight number 9, because they are kind of doing a new direction on the story, and they brought on a new artist who's Juan Jose Rip, and I liked his art over in a bunch of Abbott. And the difference is, well, Moon Knight's a hero again. He spends the whole issue. He has a team up with Spider-Man. They do all kinds of stuff. They're fighting against the Sandman. They do neat superhero-y kind of stuff. And he's no longer the amazing angst man where I spend the entire issue in some, twisted, scarred landscape of his schizophrenic mind as he has visions of Bushmaster and manages to get up out of his chair and take three steps across the room, and that's the issue. I totally respect whoever really liked that version of Moon Knight. I didn't. And he's looks like he's back to being a superhero.
Well, next issue, which is the one I think we talked about doing a pick for but decided not to, is he's going to be with the Secret Avengers, and they start showing up in his book. So I'm starting to get it with number 10. I did look around for it locally for number 9.
I
I
would
couldn't find it.
suggest continuing to look and seeing if you can find number 9 because it's really pretty good, and this will probably be a very sought after issue with the change in art also, as well as the change in direction for the character.
Cool. Good to know.
So for the listeners, if you haven't given Moon Knight a shot, checking out number 9, you could do worse.
Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss DC Universe Legacies number 2 from DC, Amazing Spider-Man Presents Black Cat number 1 from Marvel, and Alpha and Omega Cry Wolf number 1 from Dynamite.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.